You know, I'll be upfront with you. In the last 2 weeks, it's been kind of interesting. I've had three people come up to me and tell me that they couldn't recognize me without my dogs. I walk my dogs all the time, and it was, I was at a funeral, actually, and a woman who was a neighbor didn't recognize me at the funeral until she said, "Wait, where are your dogs?" Jane, who read the Old Testament lesson, I was in the gym the other day, and she looked at me, and she said, "You know, I saw this good-looking dog walking down the street, and then I noticed you were beside it." I mean, the truth of the matter is my identity must be wrapped up in those dogs, which isn't a bad way, at least from my perspective, to have it be. It's interesting when I walk the dogs, though, to be quite honest with you. Do you ever notice dogs smell everything? I mean, if you take a walk with a dog, you know, don't think it's got to be on your agenda. If you're trying to get it on your agenda, you're yanking that dog every step of the way. Sometimes when I watch them smell, I look down and I say, you know, I can figure out what they're smelling. But then there's other times I'm like, what are they looking at? What are they doing? Recently, I read an article and realized that when dogs smell, when they sniff like an area, they're actually mapping things that are going on. That when they sniff an area, they look at that location and can tell what happened in the past there. And then when they sniff into the wind that's coming at them, they sniff the future of what is about to come to them. Maybe dogs are smarter than I am. Maybe they're wiser than I am. You know, I say that as we approach this gospel for today. It's an interesting gospel. I always love the Sermon on the Mount. This is part of the Sermon on the Mount. It's Matthew chapter 5 through 7 is that incredible teaching. And we have a part today that is very difficult and yet very unique. It starts out by saying, you're the salt of the earth. You're the salt of the earth. Don't lose your saltiness or you're going to be worth nothing. But you're the salt of the earth. I love the fact that he says we're salt of the earth. You know, he doesn't say you're the meat and potatoes. He says you're the salt. Your job is to flavor everything else that goes around you. That not everyone's going to be like us. That I don't think that Jesus ever had a concept that everybody was going to just fall in line behind him. But that rather that those who followed him were going to have such a sense of joy and love in their hearts and in the expression of their life. There would be a spring in their step and a spark in their eye that somehow they would, in a sense, influence all that crossed their path. I wonder sometimes whether we as Christians really do that. Jesus says real clearly that we're the light of the world. That you don't have, you know, a city built on a hilltop. It's not going to get hidden. And if you light a light in a house, in those days it was one-room house, you put it on a lampstand. You don't put a bushel basket over it. That we are the light. We are what shines on everyone else and shows them what life is really supposed to be at. Shows them where God is. Shows the rest of the world what life really should be as we live it. I wonder how good of an example we are. Let your light so shine so that everyone can see. Do we shine or do we not shine? That's the question I always got to raise. And yet, the identity that's been laid upon us, that we are salt and light, is given to us specifically so that we will realize that we have a job, our work is in the world, and we shine light, we are flavor the rest of the world. Then all of a sudden, Jesus gets a little meddling, I think. He looks at the people that are following, the crowd that's gathered around him, and he says this. He goes, don't think I came to abolish the law and the prophets. I didn't come to abolish it. I came to fulfill it. The word that he uses for abolish, which sometimes is translated destroyed, is actually better translated in the Greek as loosened down. Loosened down. It refers specifically to a tent. And, you know, in the days of Jesus, in the days before Jesus, Israel really identified with tents. The reason why is because to be a Jew, to be an authentic Jew, even to this day, you had to have a desert experience. That's why Jews are so set on moving always through and celebrating Passover. They got to have that Passover. They have to have a desert experience. And where did they live in the desert? They lived in tents. If you don't believe me, look at the way John chapter 1, verse 14 is written. You know, John chapter 1, is in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was with God. And then it comes to 14, it says, and the Word dwelt among us. And the world dwelt among us. You know what that really means? The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. It really should be translated, the Word became flesh and pitched his tent with us. That's actually what the words are. Tents are very important. And when Jesus says, I came not to loosen down the tent, but to fulfill the tent, he's referring specifically to the law and the prophets that, you know what, here I am. I'm going to show you what it really means to live in the law and the prophets. I'm going to show you really what it means to live the way the Father wants you to live. I'm going to lift you up and to live in the fulfillment of that tent of the law and the prophets is one that emancipates, it doesn't enslave. You know, it's funny, for me, the picture that came real quickly is, I remember when I was in scouts, you know, I mean, when I first got into scouts, we'd go out and pitch a tent, and sometimes somebody would knock over the pole because we didn't do it right, and the tent would fall down on us, and then we'd struggle to get out of it. You know, so often in times, I think that's what we do sometimes with the law and the prophets. We look at things as, well, I'm entrapped. I better do right. I can't do wrong. If I do wrong, he's not going to like me the whole nine yards. But what Jesus says, no, I've come to fulfill it all. Live freely in it. Live in a way that holds you up, doesn't tear you down. He then goes in, he says, you know, not one letter of the law is going to change. I didn't come to change any letter of the law, not even a stroke of a letter. He says that specifically because, don't forget, the Pharisees and the scribes, they were looking at him saying, yeah, he's not obeying the law. And he says, no, I haven't changed, come to change anything. And he addresses them specifically, basically saying, listen, I don't hold to the letter of the law, I hold to the meaning of the law. I hold to the understanding of all that is, the fulfillment of it all. Then he goes and he really gets like he's meddling. Because then he says, you know what? If you break these laws and teach others to do so, you're going to be least in the kingdom of heaven. But if you keep these laws and teach others to do them, you'll be great in the kingdom of heaven. But unless you have righteousness beyond what the scribes and the Pharisees have, you might not even get into the kingdom of heaven. What he's really saying here is this, is look, if you really believe, then you've got to live that out. And the way you've seen that it's lived out is that you flavor the rest of the world, that you are a light to the rest of the world, that you, in so many ways and shapes and forms, you, in a sense, create the kingdom of heaven right there smack dab in front of you. That people can't help but believe that, wait a second, we're in somebody different. He's different. She's different than other people. That you have hope in the midst of despair. That you see beyond what's right in front of you. That you have an incredible giving heart even when you think, oh my God, this is going to be tough on me. That where you care more about others than you do your own self. And that you serve others. That you don't look just for your own way. And be gone. You know, it's amazing to me that he said all this. Because I think what he was trying to get across more than anything else is, listen, look at the law and the prophets. See how much life is there. And then look at my life, how I reflect it, how I fulfill it, and live the way, in a sense, I'm showing you. Because don't forget, Jesus never says, come and worship me. He always says, come and follow me. Come and follow me. He doesn't say, come and worship me. If you want to really shut everything down, just ask somebody to worship you. Maybe you won't have any relationship with him, probably. But if you come and follow him, all of a sudden, in the process, you're going to be transformed. Your life is going to go from a little bit less what is right now into a little bit more what it ought to be. But I look at the scriptures and I think about today and I think to myself, you know, in this day and age, we have more information than in any other time in our history, in the history of the world. I mean, think of all the information that we get. And yet, I also look at myself and say, I have all this information, but look how uninformed I am. You know, and I think to myself, why is that? Why am I so uninformed despite the fact that I have so much information? You know, I heard Richard Rohr say the other day that, you know, the universal addiction that we all experience is the way we think. You ever think about this? This is kind of frightening. that you learn how to think a certain way at about the age of 8, and you usually don't ever give that way of thinking up. It's not the thoughts that you have, it's the way you process stuff. And we think that way. In other words, we get into that place, into that space where this is the way I think, this is where I get, this is how I draw my conclusions, and I follow it. And I think that's part of the problem that we have. We have all this information, but the truth of the matter is we're so uninformed because the only time we really take the information is if it agrees with the position we are already at. We don't want to listen to something different. We want to get affirmed for where we are. And that's that addiction that we always move along in, that universal addiction of, you know, having one way of thinking. You know, you might say, oh, no, I don't do that. Well, I'll be up front with you. I do. I can be honest with you. You know, it's really kind of funny. I had an example I can give you the other day. You know, Thursday, as you know, the bishop came and, you know, we had the big dinner planned and that went wonderfully. And before that, we had a baptism service that was really went off well. Well, right before the baptism service, he showed up. That was at 4:30 and I met him out at his car and he was heading down to do the baptism. And when I walked up to him, there was one question I hadn't had answered. If you know in your prayer book, you know, when we get into the Holy Communion, there's the proper preface, which it's called. You know, we say, the Lord be with you, and also we lift up your hearts, and so on. And then all of a sudden, there's a line in there that some of you may not have ever known where the priest brings that from. It's in the 200s, and it's called the proper preface. And there's special different proper prefaces for the seasons for a special day. And we were celebrating the presentation of our Lord. That was the feast day that we were on. And so I said, which proper preface do you want to use? The one for the feast day, or do you want to use one for baptism? And he looked at me and he said, oh, of course, well, you want to use the one for baptism. And then he looked at me and he said, the thing I'm really concerned about, do you have a copy of the colic for today, which would be for the presentation? And I said, well, no, I think it's in your prayer book. And he looked at me, no, it's not in the prayer book. Well, I immediately, you know, I mean, your bishop, you know, you want to look good a little bit. You know, I mean, I'm probably low on that scale. I'm least in the kingdom of the bishop. But I run back to my office. I get a book called Lesser Feast and Fast that I know it's going to be in there. And I open it up and I got it. I know I got it. And then I think, you know what? I think it is in the prayer book. So I go back and I look in the prayer book and boom, bingo, I got it. It's in the prayer book. Do you know that when I met the bishop, I had to tell him that he was wrong and I was right. Now, I don't know whether that's stinking thinking or stupid. But nonetheless, there was something in me that had to say I was right. Anybody that's married understands exactly what I'm saying. When you have a relationship with someone else, if you know they did wrong, okay, I got one up on them. I'm doing it. I'm using it. But that's the part that, to me, is so destructive. That's my old way of thinking. Why do I have to justify myself? Why do I have to make myself look like, well, I'm not the idiot, you are. Why do I have to do that? Why do I raise myself up? You know what? There's no need for that. There's no cause for that. And yet, it's because I believe that in some senses, I get so much information, I got to reinforce my ego, my sense of who I am, the self that I created, I have to reinforce it. It takes away from what Paul said in the epistle. We don't discern all things. We only look for what affirms us. To be a spiritual person, you discern all things. Things that are good, things that are bad. Things that are unrighteous, things that are righteous. And you discern it, and you take it in, and you know how to process it. But how many of us really do that? We're like children sometimes. At least I am. You know what children are? Children are great observers and lousy interpreters. They take it all in, and then they don't know how to interpret it. So as you get older, if you stay in that mindset, you take it not all in, and then you say, I'll only interpret the stuff I agree with. And yet, how many of us stay right in that place? You know what? You want to become transformed? You got to get out of that place. You got to set aside that addiction of the way you've been thinking. Because God can't work with you if you continue on the track that you've been on. You may be really religious, but you can't go to the spiritual depth of love, peace, patience, kindness. You can't go deep when you stay in that place because you're so busy trying to collect everything and be in control of everything around you that you miss the quality of God being in your life. You may say and be able to recite the Nicene Creed, But there's nothing you can do where you're walking through life and you say, you know, the mystery of it all. I don't need to understand it. I need to just experience it. I need to continue to work at understanding it. But I embrace it. I move through it. You know what? We turn religious people out all the time. I think about it. You got kids. What do? When you have kids? You bring kids to church. You make them go to Sunday school. They get to a certain age, usually about 13, and what do? You put them in a confirmation class. And you get them in that confirmation class, and then for a couple of years or maybe a year, whatever it might be, depending on the church you're in, they get to the place where they're confirmed. And then you know what happens usually? The kid doesn't come to church. But they come back when they have children. They're going to put them through that same routine. You know what? We're supposed to move beyond that. We're called to go beyond where we are. That means that we have to open up, set aside the way we've been thinking all along, and start looking at a process of understanding. The Pharisees and the scribes, they taught the letter of the law. But they didn't teach any wisdom of the law. They had their tent loosened down. They didn't have it filled up. And Jesus comes to us and says, you know what? I want you to loosen it up. I want you to be great in the kingdom of heaven. I want you to live out and be that salt and that light to the rest of the world. I want you to live in a way that people say, wait a second, is that really, Jim Spencer? Is that, because I knew Jim back in the day, and he's not like that anymore. That's different than what he used to be. I want to end with a story that's actually a true story. Believe it or not, at the age of 13 and a half, I got my Eagle Scout Award. I'm an Eagle Scout. I'm very proud of that. And I got a couple of palms. I was God and Country Award. Did all the nine yards. But at 13 and a half, which in scouting is pretty young, especially back in the 60s, this was 1963 when I got my Eagle Scout Award. In fact, I received it the night before John F. Kennedy got shot. That Thursday night, the 21st, he got shot on the 22nd. I received it the night before. And I'll never forget, when I got my Eagle Scout Award, I continued to stay involved, but I didn't go to, to troop meetings as much. I was above that then, I didn't do it as much. But I wanted to go camping every time I went camping because they had good campouts. I remember when I was about 16 years old, 3 years later, there was a big camp out that was going to go on. We were going to leave where we were in Woodbridge Township, New Jersey. We were going down to Great Egg Harbor and go canoeing all through the bay and all through these old tributaries that were way back in the woods. And I was really excited about it, kind of being at the beach and yet, canoeing all day. I'll never forget when I got down there, they came and they asked me if I'd go. And I was kind of taken back. I think part of the reason they asked me wasn't because I was an Eagle Scout, although that's how I made it think in my head, but it was rather because my father had died that year and they felt like they needed to bring me back in and give me some structure and some things. I remember getting down into Great Egg Harbor and we got the canoes lined up and we weren't allowed to pick who we were going to canoe with. And so bit by bit, the troop leaders, scout masters went around and they said, okay, you're with you, you're with you. And I'm standing there thinking, well, who am I going with? I want to go with my friends. I want to be with them. And all of a sudden, there was nobody left. It was kind of like being in one of those games when you're a little kid and everybody gets picked except you. And then all of a sudden, the scout master, Mr. Vaness, looks at me and says, you're going to canoe with me. I was like, I don't like this. To be real honest with you, Mr. Vaness was probably 5'11", at least 350 pounds, and I was like, wait a second, I want to be with my friends. I don't want to canoe with you. And from the moment I got into the canoe, which the real problem was when I got back into the stern, he said, no, you're in the bow. And I was like, I can't even steer, I was not a happy camper. There was nothing excited about it. And I remember getting in, going through the tributaries, and we were the last canoe in the whole row. My friends, I couldn't even see them. They were way ahead of us, and I was getting more and more irritated. Finally got to the place where I said, look, I can outrun this canoe if I run through the marsh on the side of this thing. And he goes, go for it. I got out. I started to run alongside the canoe in these marshes, mud's coming up all over the place. But I stayed because I was so frustrated, egocentric, irritated, controlling, all those other good qualities of me. And I ran all the way. We finally got to Great Egg Harbor, and actually we were neck and neck. We would have made it a lot faster if I'd stayed in the canoe. And finally, there was no place war to run, and he looked at me, he was going to get in the canoe now, and I got back in the canoe, and I was still really angry. And he looked at me, and he said, "Do you know, the scout oath and all the laws?" And I said, "Yeah, trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, and clean, and reverent." And he looked at me, and he said, "You been doing any of those lately?" And I said, "No." He goes, "Well, what kind of Eagle Scout are you?" I was silent the rest of the way we got back. But the point I want to make is this, we say all the time how much we love Christ. You're going to say it in just a moment. But how do you show it? How do you live it out? How do you show the fruits of the Spirit? Love, peace, patience, kindness. How do you do that to the people that, cross your path? The people that aren't really easy to love and be kind to? How do you do it? The Old Testament reading's really clear, isn't it? It says, don't come to me with ashes and fasts. What I want to see out of you is this. Feed the poor. I want to see you where you open up your homes to the homeless. I want you to see where you're kind to the people that cross your path. I want you to love because that's where I'm going to work through. How often do we do that? I'll be up front with you. And when we don't, then you're stuck in that stinking thinking. You're stuck in that way that you taught you to think back at 8 years old. And to tell you the truth, that's almost 60 years old ago for me. It's about time I maybe broke that habit. It's to look beyond what we have. A rabbi once told me this. He said, the only unforgivable sin a Jew has is despair. And yet how many of us live in despair? How many of us look at the situations that are around us, whether they be nationally, internationally, or in our family, and have despair and think, "Oh, I don't like this," and grumble about it? Well, go out and do something about it. You may not be able to change the national policies. You may not be able to change the international policies. But you know what? You can change your own household because you can change yourself. And it's only when all of a sudden we get to that place where we actually change ourselves that we become what we're called to be. As you come to the Eucharist this day, I pray that you come learning how to be more open to Christ than ever before, to set aside those things that keep you from him, and to grow into the full stature of Christ. It's in the name of Jesus that we pray. Amen.